claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Sound going down.
Recording in progress.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. I have two guests today. I have a short take with Michael Ogden, who has a new book. He's going to share with us information about any number of false flags and conspiracies. It's a very nice book. He's going to have a few slides to share with us. You'll be able to see on the video version. And then we're going to turn to an extensive, detailed account of Valverde based on the best evidence from Brian Davis and a PI. Let me connect now with Michael Ogden. I'm going to make him a host so he can do a screen share. Michael, go for it.
Yes. Okay, screen share.
Down at the bottom, green spot.
No, just trying to find where I got to get it. This is new to me, so I'm sorry. I'm not seeing it. Is there a...
Well, that's okay, Michael. Yes, go ahead. Talk to us about your book. Tell us about your book.
Yeah, I do have some slides that I would like to show. Let me see if I can get this. This is invisible, right?
It's right at the bottom, the green. There's a green dot that says share screen. You should be able to hit that dot. Then if you have your slide set already open, then you can activate your slide set. But be sure to hit the two buttons at the bottom left so that, okay, go for it. Yeah.
Okay, great. I got it. Okay, so basically, the book is A World of Lies, Collusion, and Conspiracy. It's available on Amazon. Socrates, okay, this was an interesting thing. In antiquity, Greek gods were placed on pedestals to convince the lowly masses what to fear, think, and believe. But today, now, various experts are placed on pedestals to convince the lowly masses what to fear, think, and believe. Socrates told the Greeks how to think past their societal indoctrination, and some 2,400 years later, it's still a crime, or at least it will be probably fairly soon, to teach people this empirical truth. So this is, I think this is a very interesting point. My book is basically three parts. The first part deals with the who and the why and cognitive dissonance, which I think most of your listeners probably know already what that is. It's a mental disorder, more or less, that prevents you from realizing that education is indoctrination, the news media is theater, movies and TV are predictive programming, and everything you thought was real is a big lie. That's basically part one. Part two, I start out with a chapter on 9/11 and go through a few of the biggest hoaxes that have been, you know, basically pulled over our eyes for the last 100 or more years. This particular picture was in a book or on a webpage that debunked 9/11, which I thought was kind of fun, you know, it debunked the sort of truth about 9/11, which I thought was funny because basically what they're showing here is that a plane and its wingtips, which is made out of aluminum, can penetrate steel, you know, like a knife through butter, which is kind of ironic. And it reminds me of this cartoon back, you know, when I was a kid, The Roadrunner, where, you know, Wile E. Coyote would, and his whole body would go through the wall or go through solid steel in much the same way. So I think that's kind of an interesting comparison. We've been going through, obviously, crisis after crisis. Obviously, the latest one the last couple of years is COVID, and I think, you know, some people have labeled it COVID-1984 and a kind of Orwellian tribute, and I kind of don't disagree with that. I think there's a lot of misinformation And of course, Fauci in that book by RFK, I think it's a great book. I've read that, the real Anthony Fauci. CDC, which of course Fauci is a member of and who pretty much runs, as I understand it, owns vaccine patents. And of course, that's in the RFK book as well. So I kind of renamed them the Center for Disease Control and Invention, since they make so much money, you know, with the patents on these vaccines. So part three of my book starts out with talk about the New World Order, which, of course, if you look on the back of your dollar bills, you'll see the obvious symbol of the eye over, you know, the pyramid with the eye at the top. We're somewhere at the bottom, and, of course, everything else is corporations and all the nonprofits are somewhere in between, you know, creating these false narratives for us, which, you know, includes, of course, the one in Texas you're going to be discussing. So, and I also go through in part three how to actually stop this, how to actually collectively come together. And one of the things the elite fear the most, of course, is if we all come together and try to stop them, because it's the 99% versus the 1%. I mean, there's no way they could stop us if we actually work together. So I do think, you know, it would make sense if people were on the same page, you know, we could actually do something about this, at least to curtail it, not stop it altogether. The media, of course, is complicit, as we all know. And I, you know, I thought this is a wonderful meme because it kind of shows you how much crap we get. And everything pretty much is crap. So don't listen to crap is the rule there. And I do go through in part three also how to spot these lies, how to spot them before they happen. I think that's important. And they tend to follow this pattern. And I think you'll see the same patterns over and over again. And I think Sandy Hook is very, very similar in a pattern of these things as the Texas shooting and as many, if not all, the other ones as well. CIA, of course, is not really our friends. And back in 1981, this is a wonderful quote that I remember, and it's been around a lot. I'm sure you've heard it before, but I love this quote. It's, you know, obviously we'll all know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American people believes is false. And that was said by William Casey, the CIA director under Reagan in 1981. And I don't think he's wrong at all. But I don't think we should trust. This is a meme I created. I think it's actually kind of fun. It's from It's a Wonderful Life with Mr. Potter and, of course, Jimmy Stewart looking at him. And Mr. Potter says, "You help me with the NWO, and I won't double-cross you," you know. Well, I think we all know that Mr. Potter would double-cross him in a second. So, I guess I don't understand how there's all these people, and I met a few of them. There's people actually working on behalf of this I call them shills. I think they are pretty much people that make money at going along with the program and trying to get the new world order in place. But, you know, will they really get what they want at the end of the rainbow, you know? I would think not, but, you know. So another famous quote from Orwell, I love this quote as well. It's, if liberty means anything at all, it means the right to tell people what they do not want to hear. And, you know, It's hard to get people to hear you when they don't want to hear something, because obviously they can close off and turn away and all that. But anyway, it's sad, but it's difficult to get people to listen to the truth. So the book is, of course, a world of lies, collusion, and conspiracy. Feel free to look at the first. I think most of the first chapter is available for a look on Amazon. If you go to Amazon and look up the title, you can take a read of the first chapter and or chunk of the first chapter and the introduction. So you can decide for yourself if you're interested in reading more. So, you have any questions for me?
Oh, I think that was an excellent overview, Michael. I like it. And the fact is chapters are relatively concise, but you're getting at very key issues. And I think that our audience would find this a very stimulating book, not to imply everyone will disagree with every aspect. you have a discussion of a couple of subjects where I take exception, as you well know, about the shape of Earth and about nuclear weapons, where I have members of the audience who would agree with you on both counts. So I am welcome freedom of speech and freedom of the press. I agree with Sir Karl Popper that our most effective method for discovering the truth is rational and open debate. And it seems to me you've made a valuable contribution there, too. So I will reclaim the host here, Michael, and thank you so very, very much for what you have done. I think it's excellent, and I'm delighted to have the opportunity to feature you here today. Anything you'd like to add? Anything you'd like to add about where it's possible to obtain the book and so forth? I know it's
on Amazon. It's fairly easy to find. You look up the title, "A World of Lies, Collusion, and Conspiracy," and it's right there. It's available as a Kindle as well as a book, so you can do it either way. As I said, you can also look at the first number of pages. So it's not it's definitely something you should look at to see if you like what you see first before you.
Well, certainly a nice intro to Brian's discussion of what did or did not happen at Uvalde. Brian, would you like to offer any comment about Michael's book or the very idea?
Oh, it's great. I think we need to have them out there. There's lots of people that haven't been introduced to the entire world of what it is that we study. And look, not everybody has the liberty of having spent years and years and years to be in this. So it's nice to see something that's elegant and straightforward that just kind of begins the process of telling you how it really works. I applaud you for the efforts.
Well, I think that's something I did notice was missing. When I was researching all this stuff for a number of years, I would see silos of information on certain events. Maybe like a book about 9/11, a book about Sandy Hook, or a book about whatever it is. But you never really got the overview. And I did read a couple of them. And one in particular was about 700 pages long. So I think that, the problem with that is it's a bit hard, I think, for people to want to. It's overwhelming, I think, is what it is. And I felt like there needed to be a book that was a little less, massive to get people to want to understand the sort of bigger picture. So that was the goal of the book. It's 250 pages, so it's not meant to be something that's overwhelming. I think it's fairly compelling because I try to make it something that's interesting and a fun read, because I think that's important as well. Otherwise, who's going to want to read War and Peace, It's a little daunting, I think. That's really the reason I got into this and did this.
So. Well, Michael, I can't thank you enough for coming on to inform the public about your brand new book, "A World of Lies, Collusion and Conspiracy, and How to See Past It," Amazon.com and elsewhere. We're so glad to have you here, Michael. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Meanwhile, Brian, we're going to take a look at your latest work. But to give a background, I want to talk about some of the issues that have shown up in the public forum. Here's one, for example, I'll describe for the audience. We got a vehicle with a Masonic symbol on the back. I think they may be trying to tell us something. We've got chilling images of how students at the high school were participating in a drill about 2 months before the event. There's a lot about this, including that the Uvalde school district cop, who's supposed to be the husband of one of the slain teachers, Eva Morales, held the chillingly prophetic drill. How often it happens. We have chillingly prophetic drills taking place. We see the police searching for the shooter, talking about it. They're active shooter training at the high school. One photo shows a fake attacker confronting one of the officers who points an orange handgun at him. Rua's wife taught fourth graders at Robb Elementary. She was 44 years old. Here we have another. We see the cops pretending to shoot down the shooter. Here's a confrontation, including with the orange handgun. Here we have an announcement, training opportunity. active shooter course, location Uvalde High School, March 21st, 2022, time 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Meanwhile, we have a report here, too, of the sequence of events, which begins with a teacher propping open a door at 11:27. Why in the world that would happen? The temperature was around 97. You don't want to let hot air into the school. We got Ramos crashing a truck, and this I'm giving now is an official timeline, or more or less official timeline, for Brian to comment upon. He's supposed to shot at two people at a funeral home, shot at the school. A cop drives past. Ramos enters the school at 11:33, shoots 100 rounds into two classrooms. Three cops follow, then a fourth. 19 cops in the hallway by 12:03. A kid from room 112 calls 911, says there are multiple dead. We got SWAT arriving. Then a kid's in room 112 says nine students are still alive. A kid in room 111 says he shot the door. Police said police now, breach of classroom, gunman killed. A question that's arisen is, how did a totally impoverished dropout of ambiguous sexuality who couldn't hold a job as a mop boy at Wendy's buy $5,000 worth of rifles and holographic sights? This is pretty stunning. Here we have photographs of the weapon. The holographic sight alone is $800. So it's not even how he got the gun. Where did he get the money? There's an interesting report, too. On top of this, he had no driver's license or photo ID, so could he possibly get his hands on this expensive equipment? Get this. Another report. Texas school shooter from Rumor Mill News. And add to the fact the rifles were exactly like one of those from Las Vegas, exactly, down to the optics and the vertical foregrip. And that particular configuration is only available to military and law enforcement. As Gallagher often said, things that made you go, hmm. A million years ago, I was an Air Force Special Ops 3rd PSYOPs. I know a PSYOP when I see one. And the cops not only hid outside like the cowards they were, but they tasered one of the parents for trying to protect their kid who was killed, or said to have been killed. Had it not been for an off-duty Border Patrol agent getting a haircut who borrowed a shotgun from his barber, made his way inside and blew the shooter away, who knows how many more kids the cops would have helped him kill. They were hiding outside in full-body armor, bristling with weapons. This guy, getting a haircut in shorts and flip-flops, did their job for them. They don't need to be fired. They need to be charged with dereliction of duty, anti-gun agenda, meaning there are 2,996 persons who were in New York in September a few years back who proved to be those who sacrificed all of us to get what they want. This was a planned op by an FBI CIA asset. I have more I want to report to set up for Brian's depiction of what actually happened. The Uvalde cops knew kids were alive in the classroom at the time. Originally shared on Facebook the chaotic scene outside the elementary school as a Customs and Border Protection agency spoke to an injured child. Are you injured? The child answered, I got shot. The kid got shot. An adult is hurt, is sane. Room 12, where is anyone inside the building? The dispatcher asked. Child advising he's in the room full of victims. The newly released video, appears to contradict the Texas Department of Public Safety Colonel Steve McGraw, which he made during a news briefing Friday, repeatedly alleging police waited to enter the building because the incident commander had considered Ramos a barricaded subject and that there was time and that there were no more children at risk. Here we have new footage where they're speaking to the injured child. Here you have kids coming out of the building. At Friday's press conference, he shared agonizing detail about the 911 call. She identified herself and whispered she was in room 12. At 12:10, she called back, advised multiple dead. At 12:16, again, said there were 8 to 9 students still alive. Ramos was in the school building for 77 minutes before police breached the locked door with a key and killed the deranged madman. The investigation revealed that the district police chief wrongly believed the situation was no longer active shooter and ordered the tactical teams not to enter. Prior reports revealed nearly 20 cops waited at least 45 minutes. It was a wrong decision, period. There was no excuse for that, McCraw admitted. Meanwhile, we have another depiction that happens to exclude a teacher leaving the door open. But here you can see the similarity to Sandy Hook. In Sandy Hook, the alleged shooter, Adam Lanza, shot his mother in her home, in her bed, and then went to Sandy Hook Elementary to kill 20 kids, first graders, and six adults. Here in Uvando, he shoots his grandmother, and then he goes to the school not to replicate first graders, right? We got to vary the script, to shoot 19 second, third, and fourth graders and two teachers, one of whom I can demonstrate without any doubt is a fake, a crisis actor who also played the same role at Sandy Hook. Meanwhile, the mayor of Uvalde hit back at claims that local law enforcement lied about their initial response. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick told Fox Saturday, cops decided not to immediately confront with a bad decision, and that decision costs lives. I take this personally. I know the governor takes it personally. For me, it's 140 or 150 people killed in Texas the last 6 or 7 years of collective anger when we're not told the truth. Brian, I want you to pick it up from here, my friend. I'm very, very pleased to have you here once again. Let me get us to the screen share. I can advance or I can give you the opportunity to share. What's your preference?
Why don't you just give me the opportunity to share? It'll just go a little bit smoother.
Okay, you got it. You got it. Let's see. Make host. Here we go. Make host. There you are, Brian. You are now the host. Are you set?
Yes, sir.
Go for it. You can put it on, put it on slideshow. Yeah. Put it on slideshow and we'll have a larger image, Brian. Up at the top.
I'm always used to the... the focus is all wrong.
Well, I was suggesting slideshow. It just makes it full screen. Yeah, that's fine. Good. You got it. You got it. Go for it.
Okay. What are we working with here today, Jim? Just so I know what I'm dealing with in terms of time.
You got an hour and a half, but we thought during the last half we'd take callers. So you got an hour plus from here.
All right. Okay. So, guys, I live down in Texas. Few of you have probably heard of me. I've been doing a few of Jim's shows here and there. Back in 2016, I saw the Orlando Pulse nightclub shooting develop, and I had some questions. I looked into it, and I concluded that something just wasn't quite right. I guess I've been considered a conspiracy theorist all along the way, even though I'm also happen to be, as a career, a licensed private investigator in the state of Texas. So I do have to take the research that I do rather seriously. I do know what a proper investigation looks like and what it contains and what it does. And I know what a poor investigation looks like and what it contains and what sorts of content should be in it. My first approach when taking a look at any of these events is to look back on the earliest and most reliable evidence, because I feel like everything that comes after the scene or after that early testimony can be misremembered, corrupted, twisted, just not quite good. So what you're going to get today is you're going to get something that anybody should be able to listen to, no matter how you feel about Uvalde, no matter what you think is taking place, whether you think kids are killed or not. I don't necessarily have to share all the same views as Jim about all this. I'm just here to show you an analysis of the earliest and most reliable evidence, and you can make your own decisions about what happened. Now, we are about 1 week away from this thing. I do have a job, so it's not like I got to put a tremendous amount of time into this, and this isn't all polished as much as I'd like to be, just because we seem to be in a rush and people are really hungry for good information. That said, I'm going to sort of walk you through minute by minute the first couple of hours of everything that I've been able to gather as to what happened. And you'll be able to see that there are things that don't look quite right, and there are things that do look pretty good, and it's just going to be whatever it's going to be. So that said, let's just get into it. So I guess it's been cleared up now that we were originally told this thing started at 11:30 a.m. on May 24th. I'm sorry, that's just a typo. It's just me rushing. And it all starts out with the shooter basically arriving on the scene because the event doesn't really start out just because he had posted on Facebook that he killed his grandma. That really didn't go out there. But the truck arriving on scene, this is on the far west side of the school. So that street that you're looking at in front heads north and south. This is all going to be important. And so if you look south, you'd go through the field and you would see the cafeteria and a parking lot, which would be sort of the back parking lot to the elementary school. So this guy arrived on this side of the building. He would have had to cross a very large field. Then he would have had to cross a parking lot. And then he would have had to breach that cafeteria area. After that, we have no idea what happened. But let's just take a look at what we can analyze. So this crash of this vehicle, this photo was taken approximately 1 p.m., just shortly thereafter, an hour and a half or so after the crash. So I consider it to be the earliest reliable evidence that I have. The truck is crashed very, very violently. Remember, this is an 18-year-old kid, and we've got the Ford F-150, and he crashed into this culvert so hard that it literally busted off the whole front grille of the truck, collapsed his control arms, and flattened his tires. So let's take a closer look. I mean, as you can see, the wheels and tires are absolutely shredded. And this photo is taken shortly after the other photo. This was by a guy by the name of RGV Truth, who arrived on the scene rather early. I just took him off the internet. I hope he doesn't mind. I didn't ask him for permission to share it. But just take a look at the damage. Now, ask yourself the question, how do you feel after you've crashed like this? Add to that, how do you feel after you've just shot your grandmother in the head? So, wow, the stress levels must be crazy high with this particular situation. We do have a very clear plate. This photograph shows a military-style duffel bag, and it does show an AR-15-style rifle in the bag. So after he crashed, he apparently didn't take this bag with him. He had to let loose over 100 rounds inside the building once he got into the building. So now he's got to get out of this truck in this condition, compose himself, and in theory, the neighbors at the funeral home, which are across the street, would have heard the crash, come over to investigate. And so as this guy gets out of this truck, he moves toward the school and he climbs the fence, throws his bag over, throws his rifle over, I'm guessing, scales the fence, and then cuts through that fenced area of field all the way to the parking lot while shooting two rounds toward the guys that are coming over to investigate. That's the story that we're told. Whether or not it's true, I just want you to think about all the stress on this guy already. And does it ring true to you? It's just one of those things you might want to inspect. Okay. So that said, the next piece of evidence that theoretically arises from the media arrives from a CNN report that was on May 26th. And they come out and they say that they've got video of the shooter entering the building. Now, I took a look at this and we only get a few frames from CNN. And it's really, really grainy as usual. That's the type of video that you get when they... Well, it's just the type of video you get. Granted, the video is shot at 180 feet, but it's a very clear day. I would think a normal camera would perform better than this, but you know, who knows how fast it was moving, how much interlacing was taking place. It is what it is. So basically, so now you're viewing, this is what CNN shows us, and this would have been at approximately just a few minutes after the crash, which now we're told was 11:28. So somehow the crash, a couple of shots fired outside. Now we get this video of him entering the building. And as you'll see in the foreground of the video, on the right-hand side, you'll see a telephone pole, and then you'll see a sign. So I thought, where in the world was this taken? How did they get this? And so I just went over to Google Earth, and I found the angle. And as you can see at the top, off the red line, you'll see the telephone pole. And when we take a look at the street view, you get the sign. So take a look at the line of sight. Take a look at the photo. The sign is below. So whoever's taking this photo would be slightly above the level of the sign and to the left of the telephone pole. Guys, that's what you get. He's got to be above the sign. So we have an early witness other than the guys that worked at the funeral home who was standing on top of this structure. I don't think the angle works from the window, but I suppose it's possible. I just have some questions because CNN sourced the photo as from Facebook. Now, how professional is that? This is from Facebook, guys. This is from Facebook. So that's what you get. So the video was shot at a range of 180 feet. It's either the windows or somebody on top of the structure, but somebody came out to investigate, theoretically, after hearing a couple shots of a truck crashing, and they came out of the window to investigate rather than run downstairs and go outside to look. You know, it just feels a little strange to me. It's just the earliest and most reliable evidence, and that's what we do. Okay, so the next piece of evidence that I could find related to this entire event starts at 11:43 a.m. And this is, now we're starting to get into sort of minute-to-minute coverage where we have minute-to-minute evidence of what's actually taking place. So 11:43 a.m., local Uvalde Police Department posts on Facebook that there's a large police presence at Robb Elementary, 715 Old Parizo Street. We ask the public to avoid the area. Okay, so in theory, the gunshots would have driven the 911 calls, which would have driven the sirens. This is a rather small town with 20,000 people. In theory, the sirens would have been heard. Maybe everybody's running toward the elementary, but I can't find anything else anywhere that indicates that the community was made aware of this until 11:43 a.m. I may be wrong about that, but that's the earliest evidence that I can find. And I want you to think through this. 11:43 now is 11 minutes after the crash of the truck and quite a while after the supposed shooting of the grandmother, which we have zero evidence of other than a supposed Instagram or Facebook, whatever the kid used to post. Okay, so, and then the first comment comes at 11:45 by a woman, a concerned citizen by the name of Elsa Rodriguez. And then in theory, the original post is updated. Now, usually when I see a post that's updated, I see a little thing underneath the moniker at the top that says it's been updated. This one doesn't have that. I can't explain that because usually when you edit something or update something, you see that update. But what's interesting is you get a lot of comments in here like, hey, this doesn't quite feel right. The timing's off. And I don't see that updated moniker on this particular post. And I personally pulled this post. So as far as I can tell, prior to 11:43, it wasn't publicly known. Okay. 11:44, we have a company there in Uvalde that is called Uvalde Bargain Deals. And so now we're literally just getting into this. 11:44, so 11:28, 38, so 16 minutes later, Uvalde Bargain Deal posts that there's a shootout in front of the Robb School. Supposedly a man shot at police officers and Border Patrol agents. hit police officers, and ran towards the school. Y'all be careful and pray for the kids and staff are safe. Pray for law enforcement. SWAT team helicopters, full force, is active. Guy seen armed, letting shots. Prayers for my law enforcement folks. Okay. Pretty early. She's got a lot of detail. She must have somehow gotten some inside information. SWAT team already. Shooting at police officers and Border Patrol already. Well, okay. It is what it is. Guys, I just put the evidence out there. You can try to decide what it means. And then we'll figure out how it all went down later. Okay. So now the next thing I can find that happens, other than people commenting on these two posts, is 11:54 a.m., which is 10 minutes after that, and still, let's see, 28, 38, 48, 50. Okay, so it's about 20, 24 minutes after. 11:54. Yeah, 54 a.m. Angel Ledesma is a 35-year-old long-term resident of Uvalde. And he, at this point, begins a 59-minute and 43-second long live stream. And you might want to take a look at Google Maps to kind of get a feel for the layout, because he's going to be moving around the building sort of on the east side and then on the north side and sort of working up the side of the building from the playground all the way around to where the shooter crashed his truck. So you've got to go down and around and come to the right, and this is where you find this playground. This is one of the opening frames of the video. And so it's 11:54 a.m. when this thing goes live. Just so you know, I can't find any evidence that Angel Ledesma has ever conducted a Facebook Live feed before. That doesn't mean he couldn't do it. I can tell you that what you have here, he has two phones. He has one phone, which he's using to communicate with some other people. And then he has another phone, which he's trying to keep live, keep filming, keep working the event as he works his way around the school and back for the next 59 minutes and 43 seconds. I don't think I could have pulled that off unless I was really focused on, hey, this is important video, because if I get a call, I'm going to drop this phone. And I get a text, I'm going to drop that phone, or I'm going to turn this one off or shove it in my pocket. Or it's just something that I found to be interesting, you know, that this guy was like, hey, first time in my life, I'm going to go live feed. I'm going to run this thing, and I'm going to catch this whole entire event for everybody else that's concerned. So when he arrives at 11:54 a.m., there are already many other witnesses present upon his arrival. There's already some police cars present, and he already has the wherewithal to very early in the process basically say, hey, the cops aren't doing anything except for standing outside. And of course, there's other parents that are there that see the same thing. Ledesma talks on the phone, and he walks while holding the second phone to broadcast the event live on Facebook. Now, within 2 minutes and 30 seconds, Ledesma says the words, active shooter. So maybe he got it from the Facebook post, whatever. And also his comments were limited. I don't know when those comments were limited, but they were, somebody had the wherewithal to limit the comments only to a select group of people. Within 2 minutes, Ledesma knows that it's an active shooter situation. And at 2 minutes and 40 seconds into the video, I hear the first sirens. Now that's just what I hear on this video. But there's already a number of police vehicles present around the school when he arrives. So if you just look at the video, you're going to see that there are people arriving, parents and such, that are genuinely concerned. 4 minutes into the video, there's a comment made on this live feed by a person by the name of Lily Granados, who makes the Facebook comment that a woman got shot in the head a couple of blocks back. Okay. Now at 6:38, it becomes clear that Lily is on the telephone line. Remember, Granados has two phones. He has one that's streaming Facebook Live and one that he's talking on. So Lily is on the phone live with Lozados, and they're communicating about what's happening while she's commenting on Facebook. And then Lily says, oh, I'm going to go get my phone, which I thought was interesting. I don't know if it means anything. Maybe she's getting her second phone. I don't know. Maybe everybody's got two active phones that they run around with. I only have one. So now at 6:37 into the video, you hear the first helicopter approaching. It is now 12 o'clock noon. So at 7:03, Lozados tells someone on the other line that they aren't going to let anyone into the school right now. They're going to be on lockdown, meaning he's probably talking to a friend or family member, and he's talking about his kids going to a different school. See, he showed up at Robb Elementary, but his kids go to the other elementary school, and he's telling the other person that they're not going to let those kids out of the school because they're going to be on lockdown. So this is 12:01. So later, more of the conversation, Ledesma starts walking around to the east side of the school where the shooter enters. I observed five police vehicles during the walk. So now 12:03, 12:04, Ledesma indicates to other family members that he sees kids being led out of the school, indicating the east side of the building, which would be over by the funeral home. So now Ledesma's making his way over to the other side of the funeral home, and he's talking on the phone. He switches another phone call. Now he's talking to his supervisor at work, indicating that he is at the school because his niece and nephew are at the school while his kids are at the other school and they're on lockdown. 12:21, Ledesma arrives across the street from the east entrance, which would be over near where the funeral home is and where the shooter entered the back building. And he pans around with the video, and there's simply no ambulances present. So 12:21, guys, we're 45 minutes into it. We've heard a few different sirens. We see a lot of different police cars, but there is no ambulance to be observed. Now, you who are first responders, you who are police officers out there, you who understand the nature and the gravity of the situation, how long in a small town of 20,000 people would it normally take for ambulances to arrive on scene? I mean, the parents are all getting there. You can see the crowd of parents is growing, but at this point, we still have yet to see an ambulance, and as you can see, we're only 7 minutes short of a full hour from when the event actually happened. So now at 13:10, so we're 6 minutes now away from an hour, children are observed running from the school inside the fence line. So you're 54 minutes into the shooter crashing, and the children are observed running inside the fence line. So now they're getting around to letting the kids out of the school. Not when the shooting started, but 54 minutes later, you finally see kids being sort of let out of the class. I don't know what active shooters in elementary school drills look like, but that's just a fact. So Ledesma continues and enters the parking lot of the funeral home on the east side, where several parents are observed waiting for their kids. And I just want you to get a feel for the atmosphere now, okay? Lots of parents are showing up. There's real kids inside this school. This one's not a Sandy Hook photo shoot. This one is real kids, absolutely, undoubtedly real kids inside this school, little kids that are scared. And so that's just a fact, guys. The school was full of children when this all went down. So several parents are waiting around. The anxiety levels are beginning to go up. They're trying to figure out what's going on. Everybody's sort of chattering with each other, trying to get a feel for it. They're looking at their phones, trying to get information. Nobody really knows what's going on except that active shooter at the school. And as they can see, they see police officers standing outside. We don't know how many have gone inside. We don't know from where they've gone inside. The police officers are trying to establish a perimeter and keep everybody back. Lots of vehicles have shown up. I'm going to guess at this point in time that we've got probably close to 20, 25 officers already on the scene, but still no ambulance. I don't know. I don't understand that. No fire trucks. It is what it is. So now, 14, 10 minutes into the video, Ledesma enters the parking lot. So this would be 12:10 of the funeral home where several parents are present. We get that. Several more of the parents and police vehicles. So everybody's sort of moving to the side of the building. And that's where we're seeing things happen. And now we're seeing parents actually being reunited with their children a few minutes later at 16:30, so 16:54. So now we're at 12:10. 12:10. All right. So Ledesma then sort of turns and he heads south back to where his car is parked by the playground, which is all the way on the other side of the school, kitty corner. As he's heading that direction, 16:56, an officer has a bullhorn. He's instructing the parents to head back to the back of the funeral home to reunite with their children. 21 minutes and 25 seconds into it, Ledesma, so 12:14. Ledesma, while talking on the phone to a friend, notes, he's still live streaming, 21 minutes in, he's still got his phone, he's talking to different people, he's texting, he's reading information, and he's still filming. He notes that there are random people carrying their own guns. I didn't see it in any of the video that he had shot, but it is possible, I suppose. 21 minutes and 20 seconds, I think that might be a typo, 22, 27 or something. Ledesma arrives back to his original position, states on the phone that the weapon is an AR-15. So now we have him specifically stating that it's an AR-15. I don't know if that he's talking about the AR-15 being what the other parents were bringing or what he saw or what the shooter had, but you're getting video of all this. Ledesma gets the video of the five. At this point in time, he basically sees five officers in full fatigues by a Border Patrol vehicle. This is where he originally parked by the playground. So you're seeing five guys. And let me tell you, guys, just looking at these images, these guys are very, very serious men, very, very serious warriors. And you can tell that they're looking at something and they're planning a breach. And so just shortly thereafter, they all just sort of take off toward the front entrance of the school. Remember, the shooter entered on the back entrance. That's supposedly where all the action is, cafeteria and those classrooms all the way on the back. And these guys are, you know, they're heading towards the school. So Ledesma then pans over across after a couple minutes and he captures video of children that are huddling together in that parking lot along with their teachers. And these children are scared. They're audibly crying at a range of 30 yards. There's something going down that's making these children very, very scared about what's happened or what's happening inside the school. So without a doubt, there are real children, real parents, real kids all at the school. So, and then I see a parent cross in front of his phone, walking two kids by the hand. They look to be older kids, more like fourth graders. And she walks right in front of his phone, and it just rang a bell with me, like, hey, I've seen that. And I think that this was a mom by the name of Kimberly Rubio, who would be the mother of a child that was killed, Lexi Rubio. But the two kids that she's brought out are identified as her children. So maybe she had three children in the school, and she was a victim of the third. But if that's the right person, I mean, it looks a lot like her. Not that I'm going to swear that it's the right person. So 29:30, Ledesma mentions on the phone that it looks like Sandy Hook. So now remember, Ledesma's 35. He would have been 25 when Sandy Hook happened. Of course, everybody knows about it. He knows the word active shooter. He knows AR-15. He knows Sandy Hook. You know, he seems to be rather familiar and sort of letting the audience know that he sees this as another Sandy Hook. Of course, Jim's done plenty of analysis on Sandy Hook, and I happen to have read his book And I think that he's dead on about what exactly happened. And I think that the proof gathers every single day, the farther you get away from the event. So that said, look, I don't know where you're at on the event, whether you think the way that it's just totally all garbage or what. My job is to analyze the earliest and most reliable evidence like a professional private investigator should. And I am giving it to you like we say. Okay, so 31:39 into it. So now we're at 12:24. Ledesma, while on the phone, claims that someone is talking on the phone saying that they're injured. And what he means by that is he just heard or overheard some police chatter that someone is injured. Ledesma heads back to the east entrance of the building at 36:35. So now we're at 12:30. And he's headed back to the east entrance. Now, Ledesma walks all the way back around, sort of takes his time and gets some good stuff. And we finally see an ambulance at 12:38. This is the first ambulance that arrives in the video. It arrives sometime from when he went down to the east to when he went back to the north. And that ambulance is going to stay stationary until the end of the video when it takes off with one person that was put on a gurney. Ledesma heads back to the east entrance, arrives at the east entrance, and we see the Uvalde. It is a Uvalde EMS parked on the road. It's now 12:38 p.m. Okay, so we've heard a lot of different things from Texas and authorities about what happened. What I want to know is, when were these hundreds of rounds discharged? We've got Ledesma on scene. How come we can't hear anything? How come we don't see the parents hearing anything? Of course, we do have a helicopter above head, but nobody seems to be able to know what's going on. The kids are being evacuated from the building, and they're just trying to deal with logistical issues of getting all the kids out, while the serious warriors are trying to figure out how to breach the building from the bottom and the top and finish this thing off. So three school buses are now observed at 4541 on Perez Street. And then a special agent tries to move the perimeter back 45 minutes into it. So now we're at 52 minutes into the shooting. So remember, crash at 11:28. So this would be 12:22, and now Ledesma says on the phone to whoever he's talking to that he's seen a gurney. He doesn't use the word gurney, but he describes it. 54:05, now we're seeing some sort of sophisticated drone being observed in the air. It's now 12:45. I see my first FBI guy showing up at the scene at 55:25. Again, we're almost an hour into it. And Ledesma comments that he overheard someone say that they got him now. Now it's 12:50 p.m. And there seems to be a change in the atmosphere, because the parents have all just been sort of patiently and quietly waiting back, trying to figure what's going on. But remember, a lot of them have been here almost an hour, and they're seeing kids, you know, running from the building and coming out of the building and being escorted out of the building. And they're wondering, where's my kid? Where's my kid? Is my kid over here? Is my kid over there? Is my kid coming out? What's going on? And you've got real parents showing up with real concerns. And guys, from that perspective, it looks legit. So now an angry crowd sort of wakes up in front of the buses, and they're going to rush the perimeter to go get their kids, because word just got out that the shooter's finally down. And then parents basically at this point start to forcibly extract their children from the buses. The police are trying to sort of push them off and fight them off. And then you've got the end of the video, almost an hour long. And, you know, I didn't hear any gunshots. There, of course, helicopters going off on top. You know, it's an interesting analysis of the earliest and most reliable evidence, because if it is a false flag, and again, I'm a private investigator, this is just an early analysis of early evidence. It's not even complete. It's just what I prepared for Jim today that deals with the facts. But what I want to say is that let's say I'm talking to our our audience that's been conditioned to go through these things very carefully. This is, if it is a false flag, like they say, it's a different breed of cat than what we've seen before. It's more elegant. It would have been very easy to just switch the guy driving the truck and get him into the building. And then once that happens, who is the guy in the building? What's happening in the building? Because we have no evidence about what's happening in the building. And I don't care what the media says, and I don't care what press conferences say. You know, the Connecticut State Police, when Sandy Hook happened, when they made their final report and released the actual police reports and the actual evidence and the actual 911 calls, they de-authenticated all of it. They erased all the metadata. None of that information could have been used in court. And by the way, if somebody was caught in a lie, I want you to think about the cascading effect of that. If they were to be caught in a lie in mass, then none of their testimony would basically work against a criminal in a crime ever again. So they cannot get caught in this lie. Now, that said, if it's a lie, that said, you know, I live in Texas. I try to operate out of Texas. And I remember very clearly the event that took place in Sutherland Springs with a guy by the name of, he went by the moniker Sidethorn. His name was Robert Usry. And he was sort of a sort of pushy guy, older, I think it was a Vietnam vet, had a piece of land, sold it, cut off $100,000 from it, and put out a $100,000 reward for proof of death in Sutherland Springs. And he spent a lot of time with another lady by the name of Conspiracy Granny in that town, and they ended up getting early video of the church building.
Brian, we're about to hit the break here. You're doing a wonderful job. We're going to return after, and you can complete, and I'll add more reasons for believing this was a fake staged event. But where I think you're exactly right, it's a new hybrid. It's a new variation on the kind. We'll be right back after this break.
Can they hear us?
I think the break... Oh, I was about 15 seconds early. Mitchell is telling me. We'll hear it now. He'll tell me when the break ends, Brian, and we'll go from there.
Okay. You understand why.
Oh, you're doing great. Brian, you're doing great. I think we may still be live. Not a problem. You're doing good. That's true.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities?
Maybe at this
and
point
that
I
one would
reclaim,
be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs.
That's
but there
fine.
Was
That's
no
fine.
Blood.
You don't have to be
the blood only showed up later and came out of a tube.
You're doing a
they
great
used
job
amputee actors and a studio quality smoke machine.
Now, Mitchell, let
don't
me know
let
a
yourself
of
be played.
And,
check out
our
And Nobody Died in Boston
right
either.
Now, so
available
you
at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years.
to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Okay, here we go, Brian. We're back on the air, and I'm very glad to have Brian Davidson here laying out the evidence that this appears to be a new hybrid version. I have no doubt this is a staged event, but the parents and the kids appear to be real. They weren't in on it, but there are other signs I'm going to review that tell us this was a fabricated event, including, of course, just as at Sandy Hook, there was no surge of EMTs into the building. There was no spring of ambulances to rush their little bodies off to hospitals where they could be pronounced dead or alive. No medevac helicopter was called. We had the same thing at Orlando. We had the same thing at Parkland. And now we have it here at Uvalde once again. And, of course, also in Buffalo, where Brian did an absolutely brilliant frame-by-frame analysis proving what was going on. And Brian, in relation to the photographs taken by the Connecticut State Police where they wiped the metadata, some of those are nevertheless conclusive proof it was a stage event because one includes Wayne Carver, the medical examiner, in a crime investigative vehicle on the scene with crime scene tape up for a crime that we know has not yet been committed because a string of windows in classroom 10 that would be presented as broke out after the event are not broken out. So I think you would agree we have evidence there that's very powerful and convincing, even though they've wiped the metadata. Your thoughts?
Well, I did do some work with you related to the Sandy Hook stuff, and, you know, not all of my conclusions were exactly in line with your conclusions, but I still concluded the same thing fundamentally. It was a fraud. It was a show. There's no way that school is occupied. It's just simply a fact. You can read about the chapter in Dr. Fetzer's book written by Dr. Aowen. I think it's just a well-established fact that the school was frankly closed and therefore the entire event was fabricated. There are little details here and there that can be pointed out, but none of which are big enough to really draw up the case as totally conclusive. It's more of a cascade of effects from lots of different variables. Anyway, before the break, I was telling you the story of Cy Thorne and Conspiracy Granny, who went to Sutherland Springs. Now, these were pretty good people, and they were concerned, and they had some questions that needed to be answered, and they just kept pressing, and they wanted to get their answers. Now, many of our listeners might think I'm the same type of guy. I'm not. I'm simply not that type of guy. I just want to have the evidence and want to have the facts. And if I'm right, I'm right. I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I'm here to evaluate it. That said, there are probably many of you out there that are actual cops. You know, are you concerned about what's going on? Do you think that the Dallas shooting smells right? How do you explain the fact that the Sutherland Springs shooter went through 14 30-round magazines and didn't leave a hole in the building? What do you think of what happened in Santa Fe where the kid got shot in the back of the neck and it went through and through, stuck a piece of gauze on top of his hair and went to a baseball game that night? You are in a position of authority. You are going to be better at this. And I don't have any access to any official records. I mean, I could go perform an investigation, but frankly, I don't want to drive 5 hours each way to do it. I'm not being paid to do it. I don't want to do it. So that said, Jim and I talked about it and we decided to set up Uvalde Tips at proton.me. It's a tip line. I feel like it's very secure. I set it up myself. It's a tip line. And we'll take a close look at whatever gets sent to us. And in time, once we validate it, we'll report it. But I'd like for you all to know the truth, because there's a lot of really weird propaganda and groupthink going on out there about guns. And if you're a cop and you're listening to this, is that how you feel? Is this, do you like what you're seeing? Do you like that the state of Texas, the state patrol, employs people to go to elementary schools to teach them about Sandy Hook and teach them about Parkland and teach them? Do you like that we've got dedicated teams out there doing this? And even if you're any sort of law enforcement at all, the truth must matter to you. Well, I'm just putting myself in a position where I'm happy to gather it up and report on it as it happens. So that said, I'm going to go through a couple more details related to the event just as it progresses just a little bit. Oops, F5, function F5. Okay, again, we have the Uvalde Police Department originally sent out 1143, updated, and then updated again. It looks sort of fine, but pretty early. Now, I went and cross-referenced flight radar because I was like, okay, which EMS, which life flights landed? How many people were life flighted? How many guys have gone? I set up a premium subscription. There's like almost no traffic around Uvalde on May 24th from 11:30 to 5. You can see some traffic coming through San Antonio, like it's headed to Uvalde, but they all disappear. That means either they turned off their flight radar or something strange happened. And I'm hoping that somebody out there in the audience can send a tip to Uvalde Tips at proton.me and explain why all this air traffic has disappeared. I can't imagine what somebody would have to hide about this. We should be able to track all those flights and know what happened. Now, I can tell you that the shooter's Instagram photo was shared on the ground to a local witness who drove an hour to Uvalde after he heard there was an event. Now, when did he hear there was an event? Let's take a look at this. Now, okay, so we have all this event happening in Uvalde. From 1128, 1143 Uvalde PD, an hour long, the whole city knows, all the parents and teachers are getting there. They figured out on the Instagram who the kid is. Now it's time to release the message to the news channels at 12:27. And so now the news channels come rolling on in. My guy comes rolling on in, or my friend comes rolling on in from Eagle Pass, which is a 35-minute drive. So he arrives at 1 o'clock and starts filming and getting video with different people. So he basically covers that gap between 12:54 or 12:50 and 1. So you got a 10-minute gap where we don't really know what's going on, but we know the kids are now being reunited with their parents. And now they tell the national media, and the national media comes on out. And then just a couple hours later, guys, Texas Department of Public Safety holds a press conference and basically announces that the shooter acted alone. This, to me, is the worst part about it. What kind of investigation can take place in 2.5 hours? What kind of detective? Who is in charge of this? The kid's got $9,000 worth of guns, a Ford F-150. He's 18 years old. Killed his grandmother. Killed the whole... I mean, come here, guys. I hope those of you in law enforcement will hear me. This doesn't add up. And that's all I'm going to say about it. Uvalde tips at proton.me.
Well, Brian, you've said quite a lot about it. I think it's quite sensational. I want to add a few more words here, a few more proofs that, in my opinion, this is a totally fabricated event. We've reviewed already the rehearsal. We've reviewed your study. We reviewed the fact these are expensive weapons. Where could he have come up with the money? We reviewed the truck, and I think you make a very telling point about how that truck was crashed and how shaken he would have been. Well, here's another. It's very important they put these figures, these little kids who are so adorable, such as in the case of Sandy Hook, Emily Parker and Noah Posner, who are both incredibly photogenic, which probably were the inspiration for tens of thousands, even really millions of dollars, because I've calculated that the parents for the sympathetic but gullible Americans contributed between 27 and $130 million in donations, which divided by the 26 families is $1 to $5 million for feigning or pretending to have a child who died at Sandy Hook. So they're going to do the same here. Here we have the first one, Amory Joe Garza, fourth grader, one of 19. And here you got an image of her with a fellow who pretty young, who's supposed to be her father. Well, get this. We got two different crisis actors presuming to be the father of this same Amory Garza. I mean, it's unbelievable. I'm going to play a little video clip here. The one is a clean-shaven younger guy. The other is slightly older, but he's got a beard and a mustache, and they're both claiming to be her father. Get this.
Sorry for your loss. You're holding a picture of your daughter. She had just won an honor roll. What do you want people to know about her?
That she was just trying to do the right thing. She's just trying to call the cops. This is literally like her worst fear.
She talked to us about something like this.
So I'm a med-aid. So when I arrived on the scene, they still had kids inside. They started bringing the kids out. And I was...
Angel Garza talking about his daughter who has died here, 10 years old.
10-year-old Amory Joe Garza was another fourth grader at Robb Elementary.
She was a real good student. She was a very good daughter.
Amory loved to draw, do science experiments, and make people laugh.
She was a perfect daughter, yeah. She was a perfect daughter.
When he heard about the shooting, Alfred Garza III raced to the school. While waiting for news about his own daughter, Garza says he tried to comfort the children who did manage to get out.
They were just overwhelmed.
It's hard to even wrap your mind around something like that.
This is the last photo he has of his baby girl, posing proudly with her honor roll certificate just hours before the shooting.
I just want to honor her name. I just want her to be remembered as the type of person that she was.
Just total bullshit. Unbelievable. They really mucked it up. So what are they doing? They're trying to pretend one's the father and one's the stepfather. Jim Stone was all over this. A massive screw-up was made with the crisis actors. Two different crisis actor dads claimed the same daughter with the same name and the same honor roll certificate as her daughter. Both dads claiming the same last name and were broadcast on two different networks. The video that shows the same girl with two different dads, if it were dad and stepdad, it would have to be daughter and stepdaughter. This is a total bust. Two dads with the same last name, both calling her their daughter. The lies are spewing. This is one. A stepfather has the same last name. It's bullshit. Only spewed after they got caught. I got it. I think he's exactly right. Meanwhile, we know the shooting took place on the 24th. Well, here we have the Las Vegas Sun, AP Top News at 11:06 p.m. This was originally published on Monday, May 23rd at 9 p.m. about the shooting. An 18-year-old gunman opened fire Tuesday at a Texas elementary school, killing at least 19 children, published on the 23rd. Here we have another from May 17th. May 17th. For more information you can find and support the victims and communities of Uvalde and Buffalo, visit the Uvalde Strong Survivors Fund. Uvalde Strong Fund and Buffalo together. They want to make money. These people are in it for the money. Here's another. May 16th. May 16th. I mean, for crying out loud, the damn thing isn't going to occur for another 8 days. A partial list of mass shootings in the United States in 2022. A massacre in which 19 children and two teachers were killed at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas on May 24th was only the latest. Here's another, May 20th, 2022. Robb Elementary School shooting, the second deadliest in U.S. history. How do they think they can get away with this nonsense? It's unbelievable. Not to be outdone. We have a Sandy Hook teacher, Victoria Soto, also playing the role of a Uvalde teacher in Texas. And I guarantee it's the same woman, and she was highly paid to do this. It's embarrassingly bad. Meanwhile, we have Biden suggesting he's going to have the federal government tear up the Robb Elementary. Biden reportedly told the state senator, Roland Gutierrez, he's looking into having the Fed tear down Robb Elementary and replace it with a new building. Biden told him, he reported, we're going to look to raise that school and build a new one. By the way, this is one way to get the community involved. As Sophia Smallstorm so brilliantly explained in her Sandy Hook and 2, 3, 4, and 5 dimensions, this one may not have been a community event because, as Brian's pointing out, the real parents seem really terrified and there appear to have been real kids, but I guarantee you, it was nevertheless a staged event, just a new hybrid version. My colleagues are asking for a special session to attack the governor of their state. You're getting a letter tomorrow. We're asking for gun control changes. I'm asking you now, bring us in 3 weeks. The senator apologized for the interruption. The governor claimed it was not a political stunt, but obviously it was a political stunt. Democrat gubernatorial candidate Beto O'Rourke also interrupted a press conference to yell at Governor Abbott. Well, back in Sandy Hook, the school had been closed by 2008 because it was loaded with asbestos and other biohazards damaged by a hurricane. There even turns out to have been a flood in 2007, of which I was unaware at the time. They'd abandoned the school. So tearing it down and rebuilding a new one was very appropriate. Guess this, they got $50 million to replace Sandy Hook Elementary. Now, this was a kindergarten through fourth grade school. I did a survey nationwide. To build a kindergarten through fifth grade school nationwide, average $7 million. So they got 7 times $7 million. And look at this thing. I was asking, what's this to be, the Taj Mahal of elementary schools? 7 times $7 million, 7 times what it should have been. That looks like money laundering to me. And remember, we even have the FEMA manual for this exercise to begin at 8 a.m. on the 13th, end at 11:59 on the 13th, and then to be evaluated on the 14th as a real-time event. That's what we've got going on here. Brian, I want to have your further thoughts. I like all your points about, especially about the car and a host of others. Highlight for us, again, what you think are the most telling discoveries you've been able to make by your firsthand research on the scene.
Well, I can tell you that Uvalde Independent School District had a $20 million budget shortfall last year. That was published in the Uvalde Leader News. I can tell you that the atmosphere over there is very serious. Most of the people in this community, I believe, sure do think it's the real deal. And I think probably a lot of people that aren't in the know about these things in general think it's the real deal. But I can tell you that everybody thought Sandy Hook was the real deal too, until later on we got a little distance. The emotional, you know, thing sort of dropped off and didn't quite have the same pull that it had. And then, you know, they brought the kids out a little older to sing in the Super Bowl. So you'll have to forgive me if I'm skeptical. You'll have to forgive me if I want to actually investigate the facts, guys. That's what we do as independent citizens and independent journalists. We investigate. Now, all I've done is pull off computer stuff. Anybody with a computer can do what I've done. But what I'd really like to do is find the guys that that might have been the bad guys. You know, and I don't think it's limited. When I'm told in the first 2.5 hours that it's he acted alone, it sounds like every other lone shooter. I mean, start at the top, Jim. We can go back to the 80s with the lone wolves. I mean, every single shooter seems to have either a suicide or an arrested lone wolf that goes into a mental institution.
80s, no. Go back to 1963. Go back to 1968. JFK, Harvey. Lee Harvey Oswald was actually in the doorway of the Book Depository. Not only cannot have been the lone demented shooter, he cannot have been one of the gunmen at all, of whom we've identified now. There were 8, believe it or not, in Dealey Plaza. Or Sirhan. He was a mind control. He fired his gun at Bobby, but none of his shots hit Bobby. He did wound others, but not Bobby. He was killed from close up. He was hit behind the right ear from 1.5 inches. It appears to have been the security guard accompanying him. Bobby grabbed him, and you can find the tie clasp for the security guard on the pantry floor as Bobby Kennedy is dying. Then he fired 3 more times as Bobby was falling, hit him once under the armpit, barely missed his heart, another as he was falling to the ground, one went through his jacket. Then Martin Luther King. It was not James Earl Ray. I hate to disabuse anyone. Ole Domegaard, William Pember has done brilliant research. Actually, it's so sad to report. Martin Luther King was not dead on the balcony. He was still alive. And they took him by pre-plan to a hospital more distant than necessary, where a racist doctor had said, if he's still alive, I'll finish him off. When they brought him into the ER, he chased everyone else out and suffocated Martin Luther King to death with a pillow. Our government knows the facts about all these cases, but they're not telling the American people. They're locked in. When they give us a story, they never change, as I learned from James Files, who claims to have been the second gunman. You know, you got the HSCA report that said it was just by coincidence a second gunman firing from the grassy knoll, which is about as absurd as it gets. Well, James Files claims to be, I've met him. I like the guy tremendously. He's a serious guy. We hit it off. But when he explained to me that once the government adopts a story, it's locked in and will never change, that explained to me why, even though we know a half a dozen or more of these 9/11 hijackers were turned up alive and well the following day and made contact with the British media, that the government hasn't changed its list. Or why, even though we have massive evidence of multiple shooters, my God, on the very day of the assassination, the mainstream was reporting over television a shot to the throat, which had been fired from in front, and a shot to the right temple that had been fired from the right front. So Americans who were glued to their television that day knew there had been at least 2 shots from the front. So no wonder when the Warren Commission would release its report claiming there were 3 and only 3 shots all fired from above and behind, the public met it with considerable skepticism, which has only been reinforced by more recent research, especially by Larry Rivera. Let me just mention his book, The Four Horsemen, about the JFK motorcycle escort officers. You can get on moonrockbooks.com. Proof that Lee Oswald was indeed in the doorway, and that the government's candidate, Billy Lovelady, was also in the doorway, but was not the figure who, by the height and the weight, the build, the shirt and the T-shirt, we knew already to be Lee. Larry has done photo superposition to infer, confirm that the facial features are also the same as Lee Oswald and not Billy Lovelady. My God, Brian, when is the government going to stop lying to the American people?
Well, Jim, they can't. If they got caught in a lie, then everybody that was involved, their testimony's wasted in court forever. It's just the nature of the beast. And guys, just so you know, I'm talking to the audience, and again, it's UvaldiTips@proton.me. But just so I'm talking to the audience, they haven't done anything illegal. What's illegal? What have they done illegal? Where's the law been broken? This is legal under the Smith-Mundt Act. You haven't done anything illegal.
Under the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, it was made legal, Brian. The Smith-Mundt Act of 1948 precluded doing this. Staged events, paid riots. But Barack Obama nullified, vitiated the Smith-Mundt Act to allow all these stunts to be performed in the United States perfectly legally by the Smith-Mundt Authorization Act of 2012, just in time to bring a Sandy Hook and open the floodgate to a torrent of additional staged phony events.
So if they haven't done anything illegal, look, if you're a listener and you think you might have something to add, I'm not saying anybody's done anything illegal, but I sure would like to get the inside story on some of these angles that can't be explained. I mean, I'd like to have it, and I'd like to be able to deliver it properly in the right setting after the right amount of time. And UvaldiTips@proton.me, as far as I can tell, that's about as secure of a platform as I can get. You might want to look at it for yourself.
Well, let me say,
I should be locked down.
Let me say, we're glad to take callers, but we're having a problem with the audio. So I think what's got to happen today is you call in and give Mitchell your question or your comment. And Mitchell, I've got a separate computer here. Mitchell will just type it to me, and then I'll go ahead and relay it to Brian, and we'll deal with your question. Remember the number, 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. Meanwhile, lest I forget, let me add that I've updated my GiveSendGo.com Funding Fetzer website to explain that while I originally believed this was a First and Second Amendment case, it turns out that the summary judgment protocols in Wisconsin allow the judge to decide whether or not my facts were reasonable and exclude them if, in his subjective opinion, they were not. I laid this all out in my petition, which you can download from the Supreme Court. Go to the Supreme Court, check the docket for Fetzer v. Buzner, and you can download it and read it for yourself, which is why the Court of Appeals, 4th District, and the Wisconsin Supreme Court agreed they were following the Wisconsin protocols. But in Texas, for example, their case against me wouldn't have stood a chance. They had a separate and different complete death certificate attached to the complaint than the one I published, which had no file number, no town certification, no state certification. We're into the break, Brian. We'll pick it up after the break. We'll be right back and taking your calls by this unusual arrangement. Oh, no. Mitchell's now notifying me he killed the break after all. Okay, that's what happens when I can't hear what's actually going on. So if you check it out, givesendgo.com/fundingfetzer, I could sure help welcome any assistance you can provide financially. I've got this into the Supreme Court. That's pretty damn remarkable in and of itself. I believe I have a great case. I'm submitting pro se. I actually had to demonstrate to the government that I couldn't afford a lawyer or I couldn't have submitted pro se. If you want to lend a financial helping hand, you can see how not only do I have a 1.1 plus lien hanging over my head from these judgments, what I hope will be vitiated by the court, rejected and reversed, but I also have around $100,000 in legal bills I still owe. So if anyone believes what I'm doing is worthy of your support, I would be grateful. Meanwhile, we have someone, Mitchell, I don't know if I can get you on the air. Can you speak? Can you speak here? Will you have questions? You're a very discerning guy. Can you speak and maybe I can hear you, or you can just type in Skype and I'll reiterate. Mitchell, you're welcome to join.
Hey, Jim, how you doing?
Oh,
Lima Charlie there?
I can hear you. This is fabulous. Go for it.
I don't think we have any problem hearing callers. I guess there was a setting or something that's on the back end with the server that needs to be reset, I think. But anyway, we can take callers. 540-352-4452. Hey, give us a call.
Excellent. Would you like to add a few words? I thought Brian made an awful lot of telling observations.
Surely I can. Being the contrarian I am, one of the things that I saw or that I heard y'all speak about was, of course, the two men that said they were the girl's father. One is Angel Garza. I guess, is that how you pronounce it? Is his name. And the other one is Alfred Garza the Third. And whether it was a typo or whatever, I can't say. But it really appears that Garza is one of the top 100 most popular names in Mexico.
No, Mitchell, that won't cut it. You're not looking at the visuals. They're both holding up the same honor roll with the same photograph of the same little girl, and they're both claiming it's their daughter, and these are two completely different guys. So I like your effort to try to debunk, but I'm sorry they blew it. Jim Stone's all over it, and I agree with him 100%. I'm looking at it right now, Mitchell. I wish I could, when we get up the video version, you'll see how obvious it is. They both have the same honor roll for the same little girl. It's the same little girl. Even if, yes, that last name is a common last name, what we have going here is an obvious blunder. This is a glitch. They bombed it just like they did in Buffalo when they released the rehearsal video. Brian, tell us again about the rehearsal video you did such great work on and whether you agree or not about Amory, whom they're trying to make, what, the Emily Parker of Uvalde? Your thoughts.
Jim, I'm not after crisis actors. I haven't studied the issue. Those aren't the people I want to talk about.
Okay, that's Uvalde, fair.
It's at proton.me. I'm after the bigger fish.
That's fair enough, Brian. Go ahead. Mitchell, add any further you'd like to add here. What else did you find you'd like to be skeptical about?
Well, what I do know is that, for example, my brother-in-laws and stuff, there's Leo George Jr., the first, the second, the third, and now the fourth. And, I could understand that somebody would get divorced or somebody would split up and then, end up with basically the same last name of the girl's biological father. But, I try not to get too deep into the weeds, and I try not to be so, concentrate so much on all of the scandals, all of the false flags, all of the killings, all of the shootings. They are points on a map, so to speak, and everybody is kind of following them. The question is, where are they leading? And, and who is essentially, the masters that are playing, behind the scene? So, I look at more at the general political implications than diving deep into the weeds. And because, as we all know, in the middle of combat, Things are fluid and they're uncertain. Now, listen, there is no freaking excuse for what these jackasses did in Texas. If they actually stood around, if the timeline that you spoke about in the beginning, that they were inside the school with a dozen officers, you have, you know, that is absolutely unforgivable for any of those officers to back up and, you know, not wear the pants that they put on. It's like a person in the Marines, you know. If I would have refused to fight when I was in the middle of the combat and the firefight was going on, I would expect my buddies, or the ones that they thought were my buddies, that I would expect them to shoot me in the back of the head almost, okay? I could not sit by and let any of that shit happen. And time again, the new FBI training that is out here, that has been going on since Columbine and all this other shit, that you do not wait in active shooter situations, particularly in a school zone. The first officer on the scene is supposed to go in and engage. And, you know, that complete utter failure, you know, these are the things that cause people to not believe jack shit what the government says, because, of course, no crisis left behind. CNN, Anderson Cooper, CBS, ABC, NBC, all of them, and fake Fox News. They're essentially pimping on the bodies of dead children, and they act like it's okay. Paul's calling.
What I love about everything you're saying, Mitchell, is most Americans are going to believe this was real, and whether it was or wasn't, let's assume it was in their minds, their reaction just like yours. In other words, they blew it. If this was intended to, you know, move against guns, it's moving against the police for their dereliction of duty. I think that's foremost in the minds of the public. If you're looking at this as a political stunt, as I do, then you see the timing was exquisite. You had Hillary being named by Robbie Mueller, campaign manager, as having authorized a Russiagate smears against Trump. You've got all the inflation. You got all the food shortages taking place. You got all the evidence about the theft of the 2020 election coming up. They want to change the narrative. Biden's ratings are as low as they've ever been. He's a big albatross around the neck of the Democrats going into the midterm. They're trying to change the narrative. The Supreme Court gave them one plank of the traditional campaign for the Democrats, abortion. They thought Uvalde in Buffalo would give them another gun control. But frankly, they're so badly done, I think they're backfiring. And even if the majority think that Uvalde in particular was real, they're going to react exactly the way you have, with such passion. Mitchell, I think you put your finger right on what most Americans are going to find outrageous. And then you got the question, how could this kid have ever afforded to buy these guns that Baba doesn't even have ID? I think the whole thing is such a crock of shit. But the point I'm making is the timing also just before the NRA. And you got the Democrats already. They had, by the way, all these crosses. They had these perfectly framed photographs for all these Uvalde. It would normally take maybe 6 or 10 days to get all that together. But it's just like the 26 Christmas trees at Sandy Hook they already had at the firehouse. This was planned in advance. I have no doubt about it whatsoever. But I'm saying, even for those who can't see through it, who take it as real, they're going to be outraged just as you are outraged by the dereliction of duty. Brian, would you not agree?
Well, I don't believe, because of the frame of reference that I have, I'm not going to say any cop did anything wrong at all.
Okay.
I want to know who was on the scene pulling strings. Who was there? Who was really dropping the orders? If you're a cop right now, I'd be horrified that you're going to get thrown under the bus. when you show up for one of these and the big boys that told you what to do have to change their story and you end up being the bad guy. I'm not saying anybody did anything wrong. I'm not saying anybody did anything right. I'm saying if you're a cop and you've got a badge and you care about right and you care about wrong, take a closer look. This could be you next time being put in the shoes of these Uvalde police officers. Think about them. What did they really know? When did they know it? Were they really cowards? I mean, look at what the community's doing to these people. It's a shame. It's a shame. I would think that getting the truth out in this particular situation would be the highest priority. Therefore, UvaldeTips@proton.me.
We got a familiar voice here on the line. Paul, join us from California. Your thoughts.
What the hell is everybody talking about? It's like I've joined a lunatic asylum or something here.
Welcome to the club, Paul.
I hear Mitch talking about getting shot in the back of the head. What, do you want me to use an AR-15 or what, you know?
I don't think he's looking for it. He's just saying how bad it is to be betrayed. You know, there are a lot of deaths by friendly fire. Pat Tillman was a classic example. Tillman was taken out deliberately because he'd been in contact with Noam Chomsky, which was his great blunder. Chomsky being long-term CIA, that he wanted to lead an anti-Afghan war effort when he returned to the United States. The government couldn't allow that to happen, and he was shot, a three-shot blast right to the forehead. Pathetic. Mitchell's saying how bad it is if you can't trust your fellow police or your fellow soldier in combat to do the right thing. So, Paul, we get it. Yeah, go ahead. Give us more. What's your critique? Is this Uvalde thing real or was it fake?
Well, are you joking? I mean, come on.
I'm just asking for legitimate opinion, of course. I mean, you don't mind. I mean, I don't leave a lot of doubt about that.
The reason I said what I did is I didn't understand. That was like a nice little speech that Mitch gave, you know, trying to sketch out some sort of a big picture. But I don't get it. You know, it's just kind of, you know, this is an A or B, you know, a one or a zero. Okay. It's either real or it's not. If it's real, then it's going to look a certain way and there's going to be evidence that it was real. If it's fake, it's going to come apart. The way all these things come apart, it's absurd. And I just keep preaching the same damn thing over and over again. That among many people, not just Miles Mathis, but he does the best job, in my opinion, they just start looking into the named shooter and the named victims, like Danny Saris did with his law enforcement database. The name and the age and the location doesn't match. Now, all the rest of us have a normal internet presence. If you put in my name and location, you're going to get me. And the age is going to be off by 1 year. I mean, I don't know why that is. It's correctable. But anybody pretty much that's lived in society, that went to school, that had a job, is going to have an internet presence. And I don't believe any of this crap. I'd have to see dead bodies right in front of me. And this is so disgustingly transparent. And to be honest with you, I think that all these people, you know, Beto O'Rourke, Joe Biden, and faggy Michael Moore, and that faggot congressman pleading on the floor, oh, please, please, we got to do something. I think they should all be shot for insurrection. I really do think that this is, you know, calling for legislation. Congress cannot vote away our rights, okay? They can't. And even calling for it, okay, trying to disarm us, in my opinion, is high treason, and they should all suffer the death penalty. That's just my take. I'm sick of it. Yeah.
By the way, there is a Second Amendment case where the Supreme Court decision is widely expected to repudiate very strict laws in New York about concealed carry and to broaden the right of Americans to conceal carry and strengthen our, you know, obligations and opportunities under the Second Amendment. I don't think that case is going to go well. The Democrats, of course, are trying to move in the motion of the moment. That's why they create it. It's just like Jussie Smollett. Yet Kamala Harris with an anti-lynching bill no one thought was necessary. Certainly lynching was already illegal. So what did you need it for? Jussie Smollett on the scene, whom I believe, by the way, is her nephew, had been out campaigning for her, pulls his stunt at 2 a.m., claiming, you know, there were a couple of redneck racists carrying bottle of bleach and a noose just waiting for this gay black actor to come out of a subway at 2 a.m. It's one of the dumbest stories in history. Yeah, Paul, pick it up.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, you know, we don't need to relive all that. I got limited time, but I appreciate the recap and all that stuff. I'll just give you a simple, before I go, a kind of a, you know, boots on the ground, regular guy walking around, blue collar take on this. Okay. Just the way to think about this crap. Okay. I have never shot anybody. I've never been shot. I don't know anybody that's been shot. I don't know anybody that shot somebody. And I bet you the vast majority, probably 90% of Americans would say the same thing. Okay. I know, Jim, you've never shot anybody and you've never been shot. Okay. So on and so on. Everybody across this country, but they're trying to make a big deal out of a TV show. It's like we're talking about an episode of Gilligan's Island or something here. The bottom line is just by just sheer common sense and so-called statistics alone, the idea that you would have these ongoing series of shootings dating back, how many years have we been talking about this, Jim? You remember when I used to play those clips of the Rifleman on your show, you know, after this happened back in 2015. This goes back 6-7 years. It's like the American people are so damn stupid. And I wish all of these sports figures like Steve Kerr, the coach here of the Warriors, getting on, oh, we've had enough. Screw you. Just coach basketball and shut your mouth. I'm tired of these people. All right.
Yeah, what does Steve Kerr think he's doing by intruding into politics? I think that's incredibly stupid. I mean, Lyndon Johnson used to say every decision he makes, he loses support because half of the people don't like it. And here you got Steve Kerr, who's in a business trying to make the public happy, and he's taking a political stance that's going to antagonize half of his followers. Really colossally stupid. And who is that?
I want the Warriors to lose now. I swear to God, I want them to lose, and I want to just bash him upside the head if he really believes that. First of all, I hate him for his ignorance, and second of all, if he's a shill and he's just playing along the party line, I hate him even worse. I mean, all these people just need to just get shut up, and I wouldn't mind doing it myself because I'm just so tired of it. As little attention as I do pay to it, it does irritate me. I mean, it's got to irritate you, Jim. I know it must irritate Mitch to hear, you know, Michael Moore, that old windbag. You see what that guy looks like now? For God's sake, go away. Go away.
He always looked like a sack of flour, frankly, you know. I mean, he's lost all credibility. I used to think the guy was a good guy, but I've long since been disillusioned. Brian, you were amused or taken by some of what Paul had to say. Any thoughts you'd like to add?
Well, listen, anybody who's followed me knows what I think. The question is, do we need to finish the job today or maybe tomorrow or maybe a year from now? Because we're 10 years from Sandy Hook and we still haven't finished the job. How do we get from A to B? And right now, we need some inbound information.
Let me just add.
Nobody knows what happened in that building.
Let me just add, my case really is highlighted because Sandy Hook was such a high-profile issue that it exposed the corrupt summary judgment procedures in Wisconsin for the judge, who evidently had his mind made up before I even came on the scene, that Sandy Hook was real and it was unreasonable for anyone to think differently, even though I enumerated evidence after evidence after evidence on my side. You know, not just the everyone must check inside, not just the porta potties in place, not just the pizza, bottled water, not just the people with name tags, not just the parents bringing children to the scene. Not just having the FEMA manual itself, not just having the FBI consolidated crime report for 2012, not just having the final report on Sandy Hook being an abject failure by being unable to create a causal nexus between the alleged shooter, the victims, and the weapons he's supposed to have used. In Wisconsin, he could ignore all my evidence as unreasonable and set it aside, even when I had two forensic expert document examiners who submitted reports that, again, he simply set aside as unhelpful because, in his subjective opinion, we were all a bit nutty, as he basically wrote in a post-verdict report. And then the Court of Appeals in Wisconsin echoed. They gave in one paragraph the official narrative about Sandy Hook. In the next paragraph, what Fetzer, a Wisconsin citizen, says, they could not be more opposite. And yet the appellate court affirmed the judge's decision that there was no disputed facts when the fact was massively in dispute. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court confirmed it by denying my request, my petition for review. So what I'm doing is taking on the judiciary, the whole system in Wisconsin from A to Z, that they ought to be made to come into conformity with summary judgment in other states. I offer Texas as an illustration. In Texas, the case would have been thrown out immediately or sent to a jury, because the first thing they would have asked was whether the movement, Posner, who is suing me, agreed with me, the non-movement, in all my positions at Sandy Hook was fake, that it was a FEMA drill for which we had the manual bar. And of course, Posner would have said no. Immediately, the disputed fact go to a jury. In Wisconsin, the judge was able to make up his own mind and impose his own subjective opinion. This is a big deal. I spoke with a retired professor of law about this case, and he said to me, the greatest source of corruption in American jurisprudence is the abuse of summary judgment. Well, I've teed up a case for the Supreme Court. They can just whack it down the fairway. They can knock this pitch right out of the ballpark and do good for America. I'm not doing this for me alone, but for every Wisconsin citizen who's subjected to this abuse, and it's ongoing every single day. For that reason, I believe they'll actually expedite my case, because the longer they put it off, the more abuse. It's very interesting. Brian makes a point that if these police officers are shown to have lied, they're discredited. Well, I'm exposing summary judgment in Wisconsin is a complete fraud. It might lead to reversals of a very large number of abuses being conducted under color of law right here in Wisconsin. So I encourage everyone, if you want the full blown on my case, go to givesendgo.com/fundingfetzer. Really, I would welcome your support. Paul, you're raising a lot of really good issues. I think what Brian and I and Mitchell all agree with you on virtually everything you're saying. More. Or Brian, you want to add?
Oh, yeah, I just had a thought. Look, I lost him.
That's okay. That's okay. Mitchell, did you want to come back in? Paul's gone surprisingly silent momentarily. Mitchell.
Sure, there Jim. Yeah, I guess the one question I would have is what could, this police, what could they do better to provide transparency on all of this stuff? We get so much conflicting information in the beginning, everything gets turned around. There has to be some way that, short of having the Hannibal Lecter channel and, having live streaming the autopsies of these poor victims, short of any of these shootings. Short of that, how can we work to prevent them from being weaponized, whether they're real or not?
You mean politically weaponized?
Yeah, and socially.
Yeah, I get it. Biden's moving. They got a bill already with 6 or 8 different gun control constraints they're trying to push under the public pressure of the moment. That's why they do this, to create the public pressure on the political figures to act contrary to the best interests of the American people, because they've weaponized an event. Brian, you have several thoughts. Go.
There's a sheriff out of, I believe it's Panola County, Florida, named Grady Judd. To me, the man is a great hero. He has weekly press conferences where he basically goes over all the crimes that they've managed to uncover, whether it's inside his department or out. That should be the model for leadership in law enforcement. Grady Judd on YouTube. I love what he does because it's transparent, it's fair, it's right, it's just. We haven't seen that in America in so long. go find this guy. If we could get a guy like this leading the FBI or the Department of Justice or even your local Harris County or your local county, that's what more sheriffs ought to be doing, holding weekly press conferences with what they've found, who they've arrested, what they've got, and just tell us. You can avoid all the pitfalls if you just tell us the truth.
Wouldn't that be a refreshing change? Mitchell, I know we're almost to the end. You want to add a few more comments before we conclude today? I'm so grateful.
Brian's absolutely right. I mean, I've seen this guy. I think this was this the guy that said the other day that, oh, if you come into one of our schools and try to hurt somebody, we're going to shoot you in the head. You know, I mean, he said that right in the middle of the press conference. And the people were just kind of looking at him like, and he should have said, well, what the F do you think we should do? Sing Kumbaya?
Right.
I mean, it's crazy. Right.
That's what Obama would have you do. But then he's promoting all of this nonsense. All of this rubbish goes back to Barack Hussein Obama. Brian, would you like to add a final word or two here by way of closing?
Just Uvalde tips at proton.me. These investigations take a long time. We know how to handle this information. We know how to keep it safe. There's somebody out there that knows something that might be helpful to us. We'd like to become a repository of that type of information. We can hold it safe. I know what I'm doing. I'm relatively competent in all these areas, and I have help from some ex-agency people that can help me out. So you can trust us. If you've got something to tell and you want the story out, even if you're just kicking us a lead, just find a way to get the information into UvaldeTips@proton.me.
Very good. Well done. Let me just add, remember, it's a principle of scientific reasoning that one hypothesis is preferable to another when, if it were true, it would confer a higher probability on the available evidence than the alternative. If this were a fake event, that explains the anomaly of the crash, the purchase of the weapons, the lack of ID and photo. That all would have a high probability if it's fake. If it's real, those events have an incredibly low probability. And the fact that there are stories about the event published before the event has taken place, the fact that they're recycling crisis actors that we can identify, all of that is very low in probability if this event were real, but very high if it were fake. We're going to have this published at my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer, later today. You'll be able to see all the evidence Brian and I have been addressing here, as well as the pitch about the book that you heard so much about at the opening segment of the show. I want to thank you all for being here, and Brian for doing such excellent work. And Paul, your call was right on target. Glad you made it, my friend. Meanwhile, spend as much time as you can with your friends and your loved ones, because, alas, it remains the case, we do not know how much time we have left.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence...